podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Bollocks. That can't be right.
It's right.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everyone. My name's James. Welcome to another Planet FPL Clash of the Correspondents. This week, we're going to be looking forward to the weekend clash at Selhurst Park, which Sky have picked as their Super Sunday headliner between Crystal Palace and Everton. Firstly, let me introduce you to our Palace correspondent, Mig Tavius. How are you, Mig?
Hi. Yeah, all good. All good.
Good stuff. For the benefit of those on the audio, Mig has rocked up in a Crystal Palace Santa hat. And let me introduce you to our Everton correspondent, Sean Norton, who won a game of football on Monday night for the first time in about 3 months, it feels like. How are you, Sean?
I am very good tonight.
Good. I'm very pleased to hear it. We'll get on to the dismantling of Arsenal. I wish I had Adam coming on for this pod as well. Oh, Adam actually asked me, Sean, before I forget, he asked me to tell you on this podcast that you're welcome. That's Adam Pritchard, our Arsenal correspondent, 3-5, who I'm going to say you are welcome for the points. I think he was trying to tell me that Arsenal were the right opposition for you. Mig, Palace, 3 defeats on the spin. Something gone wrong?
We just don't like playing teams that aren't in the top six.
you haven't played Tottenham yet. We're 5th, mate.
Well, you never know by the time we play you.
Is there more to it? Because on the face of it, the results aren't that you can lose at home to Villa, you can lose at Leeds, and you were pretty unfortunate, actually, with the Benteke miss and then the late penalty. And obviously, you can get beat United. But it felt like you were such on an upward curve. We don't expect Palace to lose 3 games in a row now.
Yeah, no, it was only really the Villa game that was a truly terrible performance. I think it just doesn't really want to be spoken about. But to be fair, the Leeds game, we probably didn't deserve to win the game, probably didn't deserve to lose the game either. That was a very typical thing, which has become a pretty damning regularity at the moment this season, with last minute or stoppage time goals that are costing us big points. Man United game was probably unfortunate as well, but it's the sort of things where we're getting clear-cut XG wonderful chances that have fallen to guys like Benteke, Ayew in the Man United game, that you just know that they should bury, but that they're just not going in. And then we're getting punished in the last minutes, which isn't exclusive to these last 3 games. We've been missing clear-cut chances all season. Our defending on set pieces has cost us a lot in the last 3 games. I mean, we've conceded the most in the league by probably quite a bit by them. And
Leicester fans say hello.
Yeah. But, you know, what can you do? But no, it's a blip from the upward turn that we were doing. But I don't think that upward turn was, for a club like Palace, probably that sustainable without having a blip here and there. So hopefully it's just a 3 game blip, you know, away Manchester United. You know, we've had a pretty good record in Manchester over the last few years, so you know, we're allowed to have a defeat there once in a while, as long as the Villa performance was a one-off and then the Leeds game was just a last minute unfortunate.
Yeah, I think the Leeds game felt worse because of the Benteke miss.
Yeah,
where he's got to score. And I think if you go 1-0 up at that point, you'd have won the game, because there was a period you'd obviously sat off Leeds. I watched the game. It was, to be honest, a bit pinball-y, which really suits Leeds rather than yourselves. You sat off quite deep, but then you were laying traps for him and you were hurting him on the counter-attack. And that was obviously the big chance with Benteke. If he scored at that point, you'd win. It's interesting, just looking at your run of fixtures. So obviously prior to Villa, you'd been 7 unbeaten in the league, which includes obviously winning at the Etihad. But now with those 3 defeats added, you look back and actually it's only 2 wins since you destroyed Tottenham in game week 4.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit dependent on which side of the fence you sit on. It's only, to bring kind of Sean into the conversation, it's only a few days ago, we're pre-recording this on Tuesday night, that we're suddenly going shy at Everton in relegation trouble, not considering yourselves for it, Mig, and now Everton are above you.
Yeah. It's the thing, it was the draws were adding up, and because we were ahead in most of those games and then conceding late goals or conceding goals to a soft free kick, yeah, or a
Brighton
soft
last minute, Arsenal last minute, mm-hmm. Callum Wilson, Newcastle. I want to say you were 3-2 up at Burnley as well, I think. So yeah, there's plenty of points dropped from winning positions in that run as well. And obviously, as you said, the Leeds goal was very late on as well. Now we'll come back to some of your FPL assets in a little bit. Sean, what's the overriding feeling at the moment following that game on? Can you talk about prior to Monday and then now in terms of how you're feeling?
Yeah, so prior to Monday, I think pretty much most of the fan base was deeply, deeply concerned. we know we've had a lot of injuries, and we knew that should we get a lot of injuries, our chances of winning games in this league would be greatly, greatly reduced because of the paucity of options that we've got. And it feels like it's been like this for us season in, season out for a long time. The Everton bench has never really looked too healthy, such as the amount of money that we squandered over the years, just buying too many footballers that cost £25 million plus a piece, without really addressing the gaping holes in the squad at any point. So we started off obviously really well, and I was, you know, the last episode I done was the game against Norwich, when obviously we won.
It's the last game you won before, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I was concerned that was going to be a potential banana skin, because we've been winning games without playing brilliant. You pointed out the game against Burnley. You know, it could have, for a mad 10 minutes, it could easily have gone a different way.
And Southampton, you know, first half, all the way back to the
you were right. Even. Yeah. But that was one of the things in Rafa's favour, was he'd quite quickly won more games as Everton manager from losing position than any of the previous managers had in all their I say all their time, I mean, not none of them have been there that long.
9-month stints,
but,
yeah.
You know, to be able to demonstrate quite quickly that he could recover from losing positions, you know, that was a big positive for him. And we were playing decent counter-attacking football. You know, we'd gone to Old Trafford, we should have won. We obviously beat Norwich just before that, and then we come back off the international break, we play West Ham. It was a tight game. West Ham are doing really well this season. We didn't play great, but it was still a tight game. There was nothing to suggest the epic collapse that was going to come against Watford. And so that was like a real, real shock, the way we fell apart. And I think it just affected everybody's confidence, the players, the fans. And we were on this massive downward spiral then. It just felt like, I certainly felt like, we were gonna be weeks and months away from the next win. So every game that went by, everyone's looking to the manager to come up with some sort of magical solution to the injury problems, to get us to win a game or two here and there. And he just kept playing exactly the same formation. And when Doucouré got injured, the first thing I tweeted was, right, we need three central midfielders, because we'll never be able to play two without him as being one of them. And so the more the games went by and he wasn't doing that, and he persisted with Rondon, when he didn't have to for 90 minutes, game in, game out, when he was clearly offering nothing, he just started to rub people up the wrong way. And these are the people who were willing to give him a chance and willing to give him time. So obviously the masses who were dead against him from day one, they wanted him out. And it all led to the game against Arsenal, where every fan's frustrations at the entire club was all coming out. Everybody had just proper had enough of what was going on. Performances on the pitch, the money being wasted, the lack of any sort of innovation at the club over the years. You know, the fact that Bill Kenwright's still there, despite the fact that it's the longest period in our history we've never won anything. And it coincides with Bill Kenwright being in a prominent position of the club. No one really knows what he does. But you hear things that he's still very prominent in transfer dealings. You know, why is Bill Kemmer getting involved in transfers? You know, there's all the stuff with Moshiri interfering. No one really knew how much of the signings was down to brands. And you know what? He's got to be involved because nobody does that job for 3 years and then signs a new contract if they're never listened to and they're never involved. And for me, it was good that the club got rid of him. And so the walkout, I could see the intentions behind it. It was all about everyone had had enough. I don't think it was the right way to go about it. It was hastily thrown together. I don't ever think fans should walk out on their team in any situation. Certainly not when you're desperate for the points and you've got a home game coming up against a team that you've got a chance of beating. And we rely on the atmosphere at Goodison. We rely on a positive atmosphere. We very, very rarely get beat when it's a positive atmosphere. So the game comes about. We get a much needed win. It takes a little bit of pressure off, but it will only take a little bit of pressure off for the game against Crystal Palace. And then if we don't get a point, we get beat. It'll be right back on him. And we are definitely still got to be concerned about relegation because the squad is so thin. Calvert-Lewin's about 2 weeks away from coming back. But we're only a reoccurrence of the injury away and a Doucouré injury away from being back where we were. And I always think you look at the table, if you are averaging a point a game or less, you're in a relegation fight.
And we're you're just above that, mate.
Only just above that.
But you're above it now.
Yeah, yeah. But I just don't think it'll take it won't take like you look at the fixtures, Palace. I'm surprised that, you know, we've just been talking there. You guys have been talking about Palace. And for me, it feels like Palace are much better than that. I didn't even realise they'd lost the last three games. And I thought, well, if we don't beat Arsenal, Palace away is going to be really difficult. Then we've got Chelsea. Then we've got Leicester. And Leicester are a bit Jekyll and Hyde at the minute. And suddenly, you've played 18 games. And if we don't get any points in the next three, we'll have 18 points after 18 games. And that's what I mean. It's really positive, you know, after beating Arsenal. And there was, some really good things in that game. And there was some, obviously, still some poor things. I still think we're ridiculously wide open in midfield. I really don't like the two central midfielders that Benitez is insisting.
Well, it felt like Gomez on Monday night getting in there amongst it to make it more of a fray won the game for me.
Yeah, and it did against Burnley. It did against Burnley. And this is what I mean. This is why he comes under fire. And I think he causes some of it himself. Against Brentford, when they were happy to let us have the ball and just say, well, go on, you have it, because we don't think you can break us down. What are you going to do? We had all the ball, putting crosses in the box. Rondon's positioning is horrendous. I think it's the worst I've ever seen of any centre-forward. A cross goes in the box and somehow he's 10 to 15 yards away from it. It's like he's playing like a 10. I don't get it.
I've got the impression from Everton fans that they don't really rate Rondon.
Yeah, well, yeah. No.
I say that with a hint of sarcasm because I know they really dislike him.
Hands down, the worst player I've ever seen play for Everton.
Wow, that's a very big call. Evertonians, let us know if you agree with that or not. That's very big. Can I ask Sean, if you suddenly woke up tomorrow morning and the club had changed their mind, and Benitez had been sacked, how would you feel?
I'd be disappointed.
Because? Is that because it would be another managerial failure, or is it because you've still got belief in him?
Yeah, I still have. I still do believe he will prove to be a good manager for us. We said at the start of the season, he couldn't afford to get off to a bad start, and he couldn't afford a bad spell, and that is exactly what happened. Everything's conspired against him with the injuries, and that was the very last thing he needed. And now everybody is just jumping on everything he says, every little thing he says, everything he does. It gets magnified, and when you're not winning games, how can you defend it?
That's going to continue, isn't it, Sean? This is why I said to you in the summer that I thought it was doomed to fail. purely because I think you could, let's just say you go to Palace and win, let's say you go to Chelsea and get signed, you beat Leicester at home, you get signed Burnley, but then if you lose at home to Newcastle, that's it, it's Benitez out again. He could have four good results before that, but then as soon as you have the one bad one, oh, that's it again. That you're going to go through that vicious cycle, I think, as a fan base, as a general whole, and it won't go away.
No, he's never. I mean, I saw people saying at the start of the season, you know, they wouldn't accept him, you know, unless he got us in the Champions League or, you know, we won a cup and stuff that.
Be unaccepted then.
It's like, yeah, would you just think, well, yeah, forget it. You know, if that's the bar that you're setting for the guy, he is doomed to fail. But, you know, that's a group of fans. The majority of fans are prepared to give him a go. And, you know, you saw it against Arsenal, despite all the Twitter noise about the protest and the campaign against the club. The atmosphere was tremendous. It actually had the opposite effect in the way that it did galvanise everybody.
Yeah, spot on. That's the correct word. Galvanise, exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, it galvanised the group.
And you know, the players responded to it. And I have absolutely no objection to what, you know, people wanted to do. I completely understand where they were coming from, and I share their anger and frustrations as much as them. I just don't think coming up with an idea on a Wednesday night and a group of people talking about something that then they release on Twitter on a Friday for a game on Monday that is basically asking people to walk out the stadium after 27 minutes, I thought that was doomed to fail from minute one. And it failed in the regards of how it was supposed to, you know, take place and transpire with a very visual image for people to see. It failed from that point of view. But fair play. I've heard more talk through the media about the way Everton's ran and the ownership of it in the last few days than I have in the last year.
See, it has partly done the job, hasn't it? Like, with Marcel Brands has gone.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Marcel Brands was on thin ice anyway. And I remember the Athletic ran a story a few months ago, basically saying that he was a negotiator to all intents and purposes, and had little say anyway. And this was before Benitez come in. I think the straw that broke the camel's back for Marcel Brands was when one of the fans had a go at him after the derby and he was caught on video and the fan was saying, you know, recruitment, Marcel, what's going on? What's gone on with the recruitment? All the money's been wasted. And he turned around and he said, is it just the players? And then he walked off. Now that to me was him saying, it's the manager.
Mm.
And I think...
So then the decision's got to be made.
I think that's when... Go. Yeah. I think that's when Moshiri's then thought, you know, we had doubts about him anyway, and he thought, nah, I'm not having that.
Okay. Interesting. I'll come back on some of the lineup and your turn of fixtures soon as well, Sean, because although I don't think anyone's buying an Everton FPL asset this week, they might be doing it in a few weeks. Big, I want to talk about a few of yours. Goalkeeper. I'm on wildcard. Mm-hmm. Is he the best at kind of under at the 4.5 bracket at the moment? He's got more FPL points than enemy, Brighton, Sanchez. He's gator to go to if you want to buy a keeper at that value, considering this brilliant run of fixtures you've got. Everton at home, Southampton at home, Watford away, Tottenham away, Norwich away, and you could argue it goes on as well. West Ham, Brighton, Liverpool, a little tougher than it's Norwich, Brentford. Good sustained run. We spoke last time you were on, Mig, prior to the draw with Newcastle, about the fact there is never a period all season where you look at Palace fixtures and go, oh, that's a really bad run. You get the one kind of game gets dipped in tough, but otherwise, all the way around, you never have a sustained bad spell, like, say, like what Everton are in fixture-wise at the moment. Gator, is he the one, mate?
It could be. I mean, I owned him last season and I think I probably cursed him. It was around this sort of time as well. We had a good run of green fixtures. And we went on a terrible run and dropped very low down. I think of the 4.5s, if that's your bracket, because I've got Sanchez as well.
That's
apparently is a bit worrying for the weekend. Is that right?
We'll be because 48 hours out of date now, so I don't know if we should say one way or the other. True, but you know, yes, at the time of recording, the Brighton game was in doubt.
Yeah. About it. But so it's perfectly. I mean, we spoke last time that of the Palace back, he's obviously the most certain of a place, even though the back four has only really changed through injury, like Anderson at the moment, although he did start Klein at right back, but I think Ward was suspended for the Man United game, so he'll probably drop back in since so Klein didn't really offer too much. He got booked quite early doors. I think of the four fives, I mean, Guaita's, I say that for the run of games, but then we've had two, I mean, we've come up against an out of form Villa and an out of form Leeds and conceded three goals. You could kind of say an out of form Man United, but then two of those have had new managers and got the bounce from it. So, you know, what could you read into that? But if you want, definitely for one for fixtures, and he has got the most points. So, I mean, Guaita is probably an obvious choice for you, especially if you've got Santos, because you can pocket a 0.1, a 0.2 from him as well.
One of my concerns looking at him would be only more than a six twice. Man City away, you'd think would possibly be a haul with a clean sheet. It's only 7 points. Brentford at home, game week two, which was a bit of a non-event, 9-pointer. The rest of the clean sheets have been 6 points. Although I note, for example, away to Burnley in the 3-3, he still picked up 3 points, but that's the game prior to these three defeats as well. So what have you had since that Tottenham game? Again, it's just the two clean sheets, the Man City away and on Wolves at home. And there have been some good fixtures in there. I think the instinct of the majority of FPL managers is if I can have a decent 4.5, I want to have a decent 4.5. I'm not convinced he is. I think that's my problem. Because I think, at the moment, I think it's probably clear that he probably is the best option at that value. But I'm not convinced that he's a good option. I think that's probably more my concern. Am I better off looking at Mitchell or Gay at the moment? Well, Gay is obviously a threat from set pieces. I think Mitchell will develop offensively as the season goes on.
Yeah, especially if we can get more of a settled group of guys in front of them, because the defence has been pretty much locked since Anderson came into the team. But the front six has kind of been a bit dicey. Who's playing here? Edwards coming in. Benteke's coming in. Oh, he's playing a lot. MacArthur being injured for the last four has been a big miss. That's probably one of the main contributions to why we've lost games, because as a result, Gallagher sort of dropped back and he hasn't really been that free-flowing box-to-box midfielder like he has at the start of the season. I can see what you mean by he's kind of the best of a bad bunch now that sort of Ramsdale's out of that bracket. Sanchez is out of that bracket. There's not a whole lot to pick from. I mean, who is
that? I mean, your alternatives are like Fernandes, Tim Krul. Obviously, Backman is cheaper, but they look shot defensively, Watford. Dubravka's back in goal for Newcastle. There aren't huge alternatives. I mean, say Sanchez or Gaeta, really, buying one of them. And obviously, if you're on wildcard, again, at time of recording, the Brighton game may be in doubt at the weekend. Then you would be going Gaeta. If I'm buying Gaeta or Sanchez at the moment, I'm definitely buying Gaeta, partly because of defensive problems Brighton have got as well. And there's an emergence of a couple of cheaper options for them where it isn't at yours. I think that's what leans in. But I think I'm probably going to pay extra for De Gea or Ramsdale. I think more likely De Gea, actually, for me, I think.
What is De Gea nowadays?
De Gea's five, isn't he? Should I be looking at old Little Arm, Sean?
No.
I thought you were going to say that. So I just wanted to drop in a question about an Everton FPL asset while there was a nice segue, mate.
To be fair, Calvert-Lewin in a few weeks.
Yes, that we're gonna come back onto that. What about Mason Holgate, Sean? 4.2.
No, it's terrible.
Is he going to play at the moment? Because Mina's obviously had the setback on Monday night.
Well, now Mr. Dean's firmly... public enemy number one. Well, Rafa enemy number one, more like.
What's happened with Luka Dean? Come on, spill the beans.
Here we go.
Right. Well, it's not. No. We've probably built this up too much now.
No, you've built this up.
So there was a quote in The Athletic saying, allegedly, some key Everton players have concerns regarding the style of play and feel it limits their own ability, with one key figure going as far as to describe it as ugly football.
You quite tweeted it and said Luca Dean. I saw that.
Yeah, or I said, you know, Luca Dean, not question mark, was it? It was an emoji, which was like in a question mark, sort of. And it was logical to me at the time that that would be him. I mean, it's a turn of phrase that I can imagine that he would use. And having watched him ever since he signed for us and seeing a massive, he wasn't great toward the end of last season. I mean, nobody was. We finished awfully, didn't we, from a brilliant position. This time last year, we were second. And Jesus. it was almost inconsistent. Oh, Liverpool were top, by the way.
I wasn't going to say that, Sean.
So how much did they drop off?
I get like, what you're saying now.
Neither of us could win a home game for months. But he was as bad in that spell as anybody else. And then the season started, and he's obviously not been any better. He's been a lot worse. And I mean a lot worse. Now, I was looking at his stats a couple of days ago because I wasn't buying or wasn't quite believing this whole thing about how he's getting used massively differently under Benitez. Now, I feel like he's not quite as attacking, but he does still get forward and he does still put a lot of crosses in. But the crap, he got took off set pieces because they were crap. And I think he got the hump with Benitez because Benitez dared to take set piece duty off him. And, you know, he took him off free kicks, took him off corners. Yeah, he's a little bit more defensive minded, but it smacks to me of a player who's probably the World Cup coming up, probably more concerned with themselves than they are the team. And he's on social media, he's on Twitter, he'll see what the fans are saying. Also, I firmly believe he was a Marcel Brandt signing. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if Mr. Brandt, bearing in mind what I just said, the barbed comment to the fan, about is it just the players? It's only my joining the dots. But I think that Marcel's been winding up some of his signings, and they'll probably be the key players who have been disgruntled and coming out and talking to The Athletic. And I think Luca Dean was the main one. And we all know that Rafa Benitez has got a lot of connections, etc., knows a lot of people in the media. And I think he's found out. And that's why, shock horror, suddenly our only normal, like our only natural
you're left, only back left back is left yeah. out. The, you don't even have cover.
No, I mean, it's one of the ballsiest things I think I've ever seen in football.
But if the player's gone against the manager, he has to do that. Even because, if you disagree, but he has to leave the player out.
But for how massively under fire he was going into the game against Arsenal, and how badly we needed a win. And he leaves out the only left back from the squad. I mean, he could have made up any excuse for him and had him on the bench just in case. But he's obviously, that cheesed off with him. He didn't care.
Many of you will have seen, if you haven't seen it, the interview pre-game with Benitez where he's asked directly about Luca Dean and he just says, we're going to talk about players that are available. He doesn't even say that Dean's unavailable or anything. He just bats it. He doesn't want to talk about it. And it's very clear this is not Luca Dean's got an ankle knock. There is obviously...
And he knows what everybody's going to think and he doesn't care.
No, I think you have to... Credit Benitez is a manager I think a lot of people would describe as quite stubborn, but he's regimented his beliefs as well, and he'll follow through on that. So, I mean, my guess would be, and if you want to join dots here, Sean, you'll know the club hasn't got a lot of money to deal with at the moment, and Luca Dean is a very sellable asset.
Yeah.
He'll go in January, won't he?
I think so. Yeah. If my train of thought is correct, and Rafa also come out around about the same time that you know, these quotes were sort of coming out about disgruntled players, etc. And he did say about January coming up, and he said, if we sell anybody, it will be because we want to sell those players.
I wonder how Luca Dean will get on at Newcastle. It'll be interesting to find out, actually. Who else is going to spend a big money in January? It'd be interesting. I mean, it'd be a good signing for them, obviously. And he is still a good left back. But I think, listen, if it's crossed bridge too far with a manager, mate, that's it.
Well, I think this is why after the reason why Rafa Benitez got the job. I think the timing was almost perfect for him. I think Moshiri was, by all accounts, he had big doubts about Mr. Brands. There's contradicting reports about whether we're going to get another director of football or not. The club official statement was there's going to be a strategic review of the structure. Quite why you'd do that when Moshiri's been there for many years. Why would you do it now mid-season? I'm not too sure, but maybe finally pennies drop with the man and he realises his interference isn't helping anything. He keeps making bad appointment after bad appointment. Maybe finally he's realised he needs to get somebody that's got nothing to do with Everton Football Club or Bill Kenwright, get them in and tell him the best way of moving forward and taking the football club to the next level for when the stadium comes along. Because at the minute, all that's going to happen is we will just play in a bigger stadium. Nothing else will change. And that's not what, you know, the whole project was supposed to be about. So I'm hoping that he's realised this and we will see significant change. The COO, Denise Baxendale, she by all accounts is already looking for another role. You know, quite why they're letting her carry on a job while she's looking for another role is another thing altogether. But that only leaves Bill Kenwright, because the other director, Ingalls, he's only been there 5 minutes anyway, really. So Rafa, I think, is coming along at the perfect time. And I think he's clearly got Moshiri's ear. And I think he's told Moshiri everything he wants to hear. Now, whether that's just to suit Rafa Benitez and him alone, or whether that is to benefit Everton in the long term, remains to be seen. Because I again said to you when we appointed Carlo Ancelotti, what we don't know is what his motivations are to come. As he come to see out the rest of his days with a nice project of building Everton, or as he come for a big, easy payday until the next big job comes along. And that was obviously how it transpired. Which again is another Moshiri failing.
Tomorrow Rafa Benitez got offered the Real Madrid job, he's going as well, isn't he?
Well, he probably is.
The same with my manager at Tottenham. If or even at Mixed Club, if Vieira gets offered the Real Madrid job, he's going. If Conte gets offered the Real Madrid job, he's going. So
but would Daniel Levy put it in his contract that he could go if one of these clubs come in for him with no compensation?
Can I be honest with you, Sean? This is very off topic, but I think when Antonio Conte came in the door, I think Antonio Conte went and said, I'm going to this, and Daniel Levy has either got given the contract or not. So I wouldn't be surprised if that sort of clause is in Antonio Conte's contract, because Daniel Levy was desperate. So I wouldn't be surprised, mate. And at the time, you were desperate. Following, was it after Silva or Koeman? They get merged, and who was it after?
It was after Marco Silva.
Yeah.
Because David Moyes was getting the job. David Moyes had been offered the Everton job. And then Moshiri found out that Ancelotti was interested. And so they stopped it. And then Moshiri come out and claimed that it was because he listened to the negativity of the fans who didn't want him back. And that's why he hired Ancelotti.
I can understand that, in fairness, mate.
Okay, so why did he not listen to the fans when they wanted Rafa Benitez?
I don't know, time of the month or something. I don't think
for a minute that was the case. You know what I mean? I don't think it was anything to do with the fans. And if it was, maybe he's decided, he's seen what Moyes has done at West Ham, and he's thought, well, do you know what? I'm not going to listen to you lot, because I was going to give Moyes the job, actually. But I ended up giving it to Ancelotti because you didn't want Moyes back. And look what Moyes is doing at West Ham, because Moyes is in charge of the recruitment there in the main. I'm sure someone else negotiated the contract, but he decided to do the buying. And maybe that is why Moshiri's decided to get Benitez in. Benitez has said, well, actually, this clown that you've got as a director of football, all he's actually done is waste all your money. You're better off without him, because I know that I can deal with the budget that you now need to work with, and I'll get your players. And Moshiri's gone, all right, well, we haven't got any money this summer, really. We've only got a little pot of money, so let's see how you get on. I mean, Demarai Gray, pound for pound, is the best signing we've made in donkey's years. We had none of them under Brands while Brands was at the club. None of them. No cheap gems. Demarai Gray is the type of signing that Mr. Moyes would have made.
Yeah, I can't argue that the signings of Townsend and obviously particularly Demarai Gray have certainly benefited. He also brought Rondon into the squad, by the way, though, mate. So you win some and you lose some.
Exactly. You can't get them all right. And he was free. He was free, wasn't he? And his wages are like, he's paid in like peanuts and crisps.
You still wish that you hadn't buffered,
be honest. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'd rather you play up front.
You don't.
He costs more.
No, not that either, Mig. Conor Gallagher, Mig.
Mm-hmm.
Pitt were getting a bit itchy, fate. I note actually that from the three wins you've had this year, Gallagher's returns of 13, 11, and 8 in FPL. So he's obviously got a big influence on the team. And I think we knew that anyway. He's been an absolute gem of a signing for you and a gem of an FPL asset so far. Why do you think three blanks and people are getting itchy feet already?
Well, people getting itchy feet from three blanks is just general FPL behavior. You know, you could well, I mean, they're getting itchy feet about Ronaldo, and he's got, you know, but you know, that's the sort of, if Salah blanked in two games, people will start saying, oh, who should we move him to? That sort of thing happens. But the fact that he's blanking three, well, a 5 point, well, he's near enough 6 mil now, I think. Probably is
6.1 Gallagher now. Yeah.
I'm glad I bigged him up.
At the time of recording.
Yeah. He may drop by then. But the fact that a 6 mil midfielder is still getting returns and having people getting itchy fingers about him blanking in three games, which I think is probably more down to, I said earlier, about MacArthur being injured and Gallagher sort of not having that security behind him that he would with MacArthur and Kouyaté. So he's kind of having to drop back, and Vieira's bringing in like Schlupp and stuff, who hasn't got that solidity that Gallagher would like behind him, that he can make those late runs into the box where he was getting those returns and probably at the moment, probably the best finisher in this squad. So hopefully, I think MacArthur's about 3-4 weeks. I mean, before the Man United
game... I heard he was close. I think he could even be back as early as this weekend.
Before the Man United game, the assistant manager said that he was training well, but the game came a little bit too early. So he may be involved in the weekend, probably the game after, I'd imagine, because Vieira has shown that he's not one to rush players back into the squad. I mean, guys like Eze and Lise... sort of, they start on the bench for probably a couple of weeks and then be back in. MacArthur has been critical, so I'd imagine he'd probably start him on the bench if he's okay to go this weekend and he'd be back in the squad, which hopefully would then push Gallagher back up the pitch and he would start getting the returns again.
This is my problem with Palace, right? So I, on Monday's pod, my conclusion on Palace at the moment was, I absolutely, with the fixtures on wildcard, know that I should have a bit of Crystal Palace in there, but I don't think I'm going to, because I think the water's too muddy for me to understand. So I can look at it and go, exactly what you're saying, and I'm in agreement. MacArthur has been a miss. Like the parallel between the results with and without, I can see it, right? And the influence on Gallagher. So it makes Gallagher a less of an option. But I'm looking at it as well and going, okay, so is it MacArthur and Kouyaté with Gallagher ahead? And if so, where's Eze playing? because he's back now, right? He's basically ready to go and start a game of football. Mm-hmm. So my vision, I've said to you, is I see it being someone like Kiyate holding and Gallagher and Eze playing either side, and it really reverting into a 4-3-3/4-1-4-1 and being quite offensive. And I think that the idea of Eze and Gallagher both centrally, I think, is so exciting for Crystal Palace, and that's the way I think it should go. But then I'm not sure it's going to be MacArthur as the sitter. I think Kiyate is the one, really, to just be the kind of destructive player in there who's going to break it and give it. MacArthur wants to go. He's actually always been someone who's good at late arrivals into the box and stuff himself. I don't see him as the sitting holding midfield player. I'm not saying he can't do it, but with Kiyate and Milivojevic in the squad, I think it's... I know Milivojevic has apparently not been playing very well recently. I think it's still Kiyate.
Kiyate probably has more of the legs. MacArthur's work rate is, and his engine is probably not matched in the squad. I can see him probably sitting back a bit more as time goes on, because obviously he's, you know, like all of us, he's pushing on in years. And that's probably why they brought in Will Hughes to almost take that sort of role from him eventually. You could probably see like Hughes and then Eze, hopefully Gallagher next season. You never know. Could be very expensive in front of him, and then having Elisa on the right, Zaha on the left, and then Edouard/Benteke in the middle.
It's really nice, Mick, that you've got options, because so often we look at your team and we go, yeah, I know the 11. I can name 9 or 10 of them. Like, in terms of the front areas, say if we put in Eze and MacArthur back in there, I've no idea what 11 you pick at the weekend. And I think that's the big problem for me. I look at Benteke and I think, yeah, definitely, I'm really interested. But then there's certain games, like I could see like Tottenham away maybe being one where he likes to use Zaha as a central forward. Then he's bringing Edouard into the team. I think Edouard could be a really good asset, but he seems to be ending up in a wide position a lot. Elise is so exciting, but he's not starting at the moment, is he? I mean, it's not to say that he won't on a given weekend, but we'd be guessing, wouldn't we?
Yeah. That's the thing. I saw Jaden Kitchen, I think, something like Jaden commented on your post about it, asking about Elise and if he could see him starting and if he was a bit of a trouble. But I think he's been fit for a good few weeks now, and he's continued with Ayew on the right hand side, which has its pluses. I mean, he has good work rate. He does get back. He does get stuck in. But then his crosses aren't the best thing in the world. His finishing has kind of dropped off this season. I mean, he was pretty good last season, the season before that. That's kind of dropped off. Again, a confidence player, which he hasn't got full of at the season. So if I owned Elise, I probably wouldn't own him for very much longer. And I wouldn't be buying him until he got a consistent run of starts. The only real ones you can look in the forward bits is Zaha, who's always going to play. Benteke, Edouard is sort of a 50-50, which one he's going to go with from each game. And it's only really Gallagher. And then, like you said, Mitchell, that are probably going to get your returns. Mitchell's going to get the bonus points. Guaita probably doesn't make as many saves to get the bonus points as someone like Sanchez or Ramsdale do. But up front, it's, as you said, it's a blessing in disguise that we've got options that we never had before. But it does make Viet Patrick roulette a bit of a thing.
I'm gonna put you on the spot, Mick. Give us one word answers on these then. If he's fit, Gallagher versus Smith Rowe.
Smith Rowe.
Gallagher versus Bowen.
Gallagher
over Bowen, yeah, but not over Smith Rowe.
Yeah.
Oh, tears up wild card. Okay. Gallagher versus Gray.
Ooh. No, I still with Gallagher.
Sean? Damari Gray? If you're on wild card, could you stick him in?
Yeah.
He's 5.5.
Yeah.
He's playing an offensive position.
Yeah.
But you're not going to, though, are you?
I'm not playing my wild card. I got out of that one.
I must say, Damari Gray has not been in my thinking. But I do agree that actually probably when you were last on, Sean, we spoke so much, didn't we? It was at the time it was really kind of on trend. Gray, Townsend and Decore had all gone up in price and looked like they were going to dominate that area. And actually Gallagher was the other one in the conversation at the time of these 5.5s. They've all dropped back down. Gallagher's kept going up to 6.1. He could reverse back the other way, couldn't they, actually? I'm not interested, I don't think, Sean, until you come out these next few. Like, Palace away is still tough. Chelsea away is dirty.
But Palace have been leaky. Leicester,
you've won one fucking game, and mate, and you're leaky. All over it, aren't you?
No, from an FPL point of view, I'm not going to do it because I'm not going to have any Everton players anymore that I've just decided. Ever. Yeah. No, that's it.
I'm going to pull you on that. Do not tell me, right? Once you come out these next few fixtures, the run of fixtures you have from Leicester, Burnley, Newcastle, Brighton, Norwich, Villa, Newcastle, Leeds, and some of them more difficult ones like Villa and Leeds, they're at home at Goodison as well.
Yeah.
Do not tell me that at that point you are not going to be looking at Calvert-Lewin or Richarlison.
No, I won't. I won't.
For the benefit of those on the audio, Sean is right tucking his tongue into his cheek.
I won't. But what I will say is...
Voice went up a level.
My 7-year-old son has a team. And Damari Gray's in it.
Good lad.
And he got into his team last week.
Good lad.
He's basically going to live vicariously
for those
his son.
Exactly.
For those who held Gray, hold is it still? Oh, if you've come this far,
yeah. Who else? I mean, we just spoke about the.
Well, it's if you can go main, up to one of them other players and said, really, isn't it?
Keep Damari Gray. Damari Gray's been brilliant all season.
All right, fine. That settles it. Mig, I'm going to ask you to predict your front three at the weekend.
Ayew, Zaha, and Benteke.
Okay. So you don't fit Eze to start yet and probably no Edouard either.
No.
The thing is, though, that could so easily be two or three different. Yeah. I mean, it makes me angry that I still consider Zaha. So, would you go Zaha at 0.8 million more than Smith Rowe?
No.
That's where I'm at as well. I can't justify paying more for Zaha when... I look at it, it's not far up for Bernardo Silva and Gundogan, and it's not, and it's down for Jared Bowen and Smith Rowe and stuff. Despite the fixtures, I think I'm going to let it go, unfortunately, Mig. Sean, we will have eyes on your team, mate. Once you get through these next few, Calvert-Lewin owned by nobody will be interesting. Honestly, really interesting.
I banned myself. It's a self-imposed ban and I won't break it.
No, that's fine, mate. I get that. But those forwards at that area at the moment don't look like doing anything. I bet I see a team in 4 or 5 weeks that's got Antonio, Calvert-Lewin and Bamford.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I've got Rafinha. If I didn't have Rafinha, I was looking at Bamford. But Leeds' fixtures are terrible.
Yeah, dirty run, yeah. But again, both of you change at the same time. It's not a bad idea at the moment. I know people think they're selling Antonio, but actually he's a good holder for one of the two. And obviously West Ham's fixtures changed now.
Their fixtures are good, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think it could probably just go back to how it was at the start, where Antonio, Calvert-Lewin, Bamford.
Yeah.
It depends whether you want to risk not having Ronaldo or not.
Could do. And if you've got the luxury, everyone, I've got a guaranteed two-pointer for you every week on your bench, and that's Harry Kane. Although maybe not this week with a game possibly getting postponed. See, we can all have a laugh at ourselves. Mig, Sean, absolute pleasure. Thank you both so much. Mig, before we let you go, can you predict the correct score for Sunday for us, please?
1-1.
1-1. Sean?
Well, quick question. When was the last time Crystal Palace beat Everton at home?
It's one for Mig, isn't it? I'm going to say it's been about 5 years.
On Sunday. Actually, no, I just said 1-0, so no.
How long's it been, Sean? Go on.
1994 was the last time Palace won a home game against them.
Bollocks. That can't be right.
It's right.
They haven't beat you at home for nearly 30 years. And I realise Palace haven't been in the division for all of those years.
Yeah.
Is that right, Mick? There must be a game. Think of something, mate.
The testimonial, surely, somewhere. No, I can't.
1994. Who scored? Chris Armstrong.
My app doesn't tell me who scored. I had a look. It doesn't tell me. But they haven't beat us since 1994 at home. I was astounded. And so for that reason, Palace 2, Everton 1.
Absolutely love your style, Sean. In summary, I'm going to go with the same, actually. Yeah, I think that was a real, real positive for you on Monday night, Sean, and I'm really pleased for you. I'm selfishly very pleased for myself as well, while trying to look through historical Crystal Palace Everton fixtures. And Sean is right, 1-0, 22nd of October, 1994. That's amazing, actually. I can't believe that. But yeah, bollocks, I think that's going to come to an end this weekend anyway. I'm going to go 1-0 Palace, actually. I'm going to go 1-0 Palace. Sean, once you're out the woods next couple of games, I know there's been a lot of, we're going to be in trouble, Evertonians. And I think you're already in a position where the season's not going to be what you wanted it to be. But I've never been that concerned that once you get the players back fit to the spine, Mina, Decorey, Calvert-Lewin, that things would get better. And you've got a brilliant run of fixtures from 18 or so. Mig, I've got no concerns on your team, mate. Absolutely none. I think you'll be absolutely fine. I think you'll do well over the next few as well. Where can everyone follow you on Twitter, Mig?
I just want to point out, since 1994, there's only been 10 games.
Yeah, but it's 10 home games.
Out of the world.
No, I get that.
Five of those were draws. Right? It's not terrible.
Mig, I'm not being funny. You ain't beat Everton at home in 10 games. Listen, that's right. Shit, mate.
These things have to change, and they're going to change on the weekend.
Okay? Listen, they've been like wrecks away from home for 30 years, right? So at Goodison,
we like
yeah,
to
fine.
Do our charity work. I want to give these guys points, keep them in the league, keep them happy.
Mick, love you, mate. Where can everyone follow you on the old bird app, mate?
It's at Migtavius, MIGTAVIUS.
Fantastic. And Sean, where can everyone follow you, mate?
Spirit_blue.
Good stuff. Thank you very much and best of luck for the weekend, guys. Next week's Clash of the Correspondents, obviously it's a set of midweek fixtures again, but we are going to squeeze in Wolves and Chelsea for you ahead of their Game Week 18 meeting with Bradley Parker and Ted Moore, Rotation FPL. For the weekend, Mig, Sean, I wish you the very best of luck. Cue music, please, Manchild.
Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.